Welcome everyone to the Words Matter Pod, the podcast dedicated to wordsmiths. My name is Akil. I'm here to the right of me with certified life coach and author of Heal Forward. It's for all the cameras. Purvis Taylor III.
What's up, brother?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good, man. It's the sun is shining. It's about to be 70 degrees. I'm good.
Early March.
I know.
Winter don't even exist no more.
That's wild, right?
Yeah. That's for a different podcast. So who are you?
Who am I? That's a very, very, very good question. I ask myself that all the time. I am Purvis Taylor III. I'm originally from Lancaster, Texas. I'm the oldest of three children. I'm a country boy. I'm a man who likes to enjoy life and see other people enjoy life and help people to flourish and thrive, and you know, I'm a work in progress.
Yeah. RVO.
Yeah.
Are there any specific events in your life that led you down this path of becoming a life coach and a mental health professional?
Absolutely. And I'm trying to make it as brief as possible. So I'm 24 years old. I just started working at Def Jam Records, and I just got signed to Wilhelmina Models.
Oh, wow.
And my daddy calls me one day, and, you know, we're having this conversation. He's just like, son, you know, you're going to write books, and you're going to help men, and you're going to help people to, you know, be the best version of themselves. And I'm like, where's this coming from? Like, it was very weird. That was like the last conversation I had with my dad before he passed away.
It's a great conversation to have, though.
And he passed away from a heroin overdose, unfortunately. And that kind of sent me on a path of just like depression, obviously depression. And so many things came to surface that I had suppressed, like, you know, being bullied as a child, being molested, and, you know, just thoughts of depression that I had as a teenager, those things like that. And so I was in a really, really dark space for like several years.
Yeah.
And I asked, and I remember, you know, laying on my apartment floor, like prostrate before God and just asking, you know, for something. Like, what's something that I can hold on to? Because I always believe you got to hold on to something when you're going through a dark time. And and God brought to my remembrance, you know, that I always was the person that people came to for advice.
Yeah.
That I was always the sounding board. I was always the safe space.
Yeah.
And, you know, during that time, oddly enough, I think this is around Twitter is getting started.
Facebook. Like 09, 08.
09, 08. Yeah. And somebody I went to junior high school with, she sent me a letter. She kept this letter of encouragement that I gave her in junior high. Like, I gave somebody a letter of encouragement in junior high. So I was like, okay, so this is like a common thing in my life. And I was like, okay, so that's what I'm supposed to do.
What was she going through?
Some dude didn't like her. And I was just kind of like, you know, you're beautiful, you're amazing, you know, it doesn't matter what, you know, whatever, you know, but I didn't even know I said that to somebody in junior high, you know? So that kind of just put me on the path that I'm on today.
Yeah. How do you become, I mean, what's going on? And if you don't mind if I ask.
You can ask whatever you want to ask, brother.
Where did you say you were from again in Texas?
I'm from Lancaster, Texas.
Lancaster, Texas. What was going on in Lancaster, Texas that would lead Purvis Taylor III down a path of becoming a life coach?
Man, you know, it's funny. Like, you know how you could be born in a place, but you just know you don't fit in?
Yeah.
That's what it was for me. And it's funny because people who are from New York, who know my personality, who really get me, they were like, oh, Purvis, you would have won in New York City. Like, if you were raised in New York.
Why they say that?
Well, just because my personality, I'm just different. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm not alpha male. I'm not necessarily beta, but you know what I mean? Like, I like to dance. I like music. I like the art. Yeah. You know what I mean? That type of thing. So it's just like, in Texas is sports.
For sure.
Strictly.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
If you don't play football, if you don't play basketball, if you really don't play football, it's pretty much a wrap for you. You know what I mean?
Arts and culture is not really a thing. Probably maybe like in the bigger cities, but not.
Yeah, it's not a big thing out there. Like I just and I love my Lancaster family, you know, friends that I grew up with, but I just, you know, I was just different. So, you know, I was called gay every day. It was faggot, punk, sissy. And it was the most ironic thing because I was still popular. Yeah. That's odd, right? That doesn't make sense. But yeah, I was always like the subject of...
He'll be hating, man.
Yeah, but you know, oddly enough, I feel like that prepares you for where you're going.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't handle that, then you really can't handle success. So I didn't know, you know, even though that was a horrible situation to grow up in, it definitely helped shape who I am.
Yeah. So, you know, how do you become who you are? And it did modeling and working at Def Jam, did that lead you to come into New York City?
Yeah, so I went to undergrad, University of Miami, and I went to college just to appease my parents.
Yeah.
Because I was really trying to be Puff and just move to New York and start my own record label empire. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. Thank God it didn't happen. But yeah, I always loved music and I always wanted to work at a record label. And so like Lior Cohen, who was the CEO of Island Def Jam at the time, yeah. He was an alumnus of University of Miami, but University of Miami didn't know that.
Oh,
okay. I'm the one that knew that because I read an article. And so I created a like kind of like a partnership between Lior and University of Miami. And Lior was just like, yo, anytime you're in New York, hit me up. And I did.
And I mean, at this time, right? I mean, what is this, like the late 90s, early 2000s?
Early 2000s.
So how do you get in contact with Lior Cohen in those days? Because nowadays it's so easy to get in contact with somebody you just...
But during that time, yeah. So it's crazy. So one of my good friends, her name is Dion Ferguson. Dion used to work at Def Jam in the royalties department. So what I did was I guessed his email based off of what her email was.
Yeah.
So Dion.Ferguson at UMusic, I figured his was Lior.Cohen at UMusic. And so I just emailed, I sent the email to the president of the school and I CC'd Lior and I just took a risk and Lior responded. And he was just like, he responded with like, call me. He had his cell phone number. I called him. It was wild. Yeah.
Wow, just on a whim. You never know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? People might have that self-doubt, especially now. I guess like the version of that is seeing somebody who's verified on social media and you kind of hesitant to get in touch with them. Like you're verified on social media and I was kind of hesitant to get in touch with you. Like, is he going to like curve me?
But no, bro, I ain't.
You were pretty, you probably answered my email within 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, thank you for that.
No problem, brother. I've been curved a lot.
Yeah.
So I definitely don't want to be that person. I don't want to, you know, perpetuate that narrative. So I was just like, nah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you become a life coach after modeling, being signed to Wilhelmina and working in the music business? Like how, cause that you don't really think that's going to be the natural trajectory.
You know, so it's funny. I think about that often because at that point in my life, you know, being signed to Wilhelmina and, you know, being in the music industry, all those things like that, going to industry parties and things, I just wasn't happy though. I wanted something that, and you know, you're on auditions, you know, all this stuff and you get rejected and it's just like, it's heavy, you know? So like my heart goes out to artists or whatever. Y'all are the true heroes, but I wanted something that was authentically Purvis. I realized that I wanted to be famous because I wanted to get back at the people who made fun of me. So my intention wasn't right.
Yeah.
Wasn't pure.
Yeah.
But my intention about seeing people be amazing and be their best version of themselves, that was really who I was. But there just wasn't no space for that, you know? But I took a risk. I went against the grain. The last job I had, I worked at this place called the Core Club. And for those of you who don't know, the Core Club is a private club for CEOs, executives, and celebrities. where it's like $50,000 a year to be a member.
It's kind of like what Soho House is now.
It's like Soho House, but it's more expensive than Soho House. Like the CEO of Starbucks was a member. You know what I mean? Like Magic Johnson was a member. You know what I mean? Like that type of thing. And that was the last job that I had. And I said, I'm not working for anyone again. And I just took the risk. And I was just like, I'm just going to do this life coaching thing. I don't know why I did it.
Yeah.
It was, looking back, it was kind of foolish. But I just went for it.
So there was no influences, just people?
My pastor, A.R. Bernard.
Okay.
He was a huge influence. Ayanna Van Zandt.
Okay, yeah.
She was a huge influence. This lady named Sylvia High, she's a life coach and she's with the Momentum family. I had known about her before I actually took Momentum. But you know, just certain people you see touch points here and there, they're just like, oh wow, I just want to do that. But really, I would say singularly A.R. Bernard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with that relationship that you have with A.R. Bernard, is he based in Lancaster as well?
No, A.R. Bernard is here in Brooklyn.
Okay.
CCC.
So with that relationship that you have with him, can you liken becoming who you are now to a pastor feeling like they were called to becoming a pastor?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about what makes him so dope to me is that he's intellectual.
Yeah.
He's not, you know, he doesn't really engage in a lot of emotionalism. Mm. And I'm a very emotional person, but he doesn't really engage in a lot of emotionalism. And he teaches us to think critically. And just the way he approaches the Bible, the word, and also like that, he does it like a life coach. It's very life application.
Yeah.
So that's the way I receive things. And so like when I saw him first speak, I was like, oh my God, I didn't want to be a pastor. But I was like, but I want to, whatever it is I do, I'm going to do it like that.
Yeah.
And so that was like the connection.
So it was the intellectualism that was the draw for you. You know,
I didn't grow up in like, you know, Pentecostal, apostolic, you know, where it's like people fall out and stuff like that. I didn't grow up in that. You know, so like, I wasn't drawn to that.
Yeah.
Even though respect.
You grew up like Methodist?
Actually, I grew up Catholic.
Oh, wow. That's, you know, you don't really meet a lot of like Black American people.
That are Catholic. Yeah. So my mother was Catholic. Then we went to a Baptist church, like as I got older, but even yet still, it still wasn't like a lot of emotionalism.
Yeah.
And so like, I don't know. It was just the way he disseminated the word. I was just kind of like, wow. Like I literally was taken aback. And you see his A.R. Bernard right there, his post on the board. Yeah, no, it was just, I just never seen anything like that.
Yeah. Do you draw a lot of his style or do you?
In the beginning I did. Because I was just like, you know, you kind of model after people. But then I just started to find my own way. As I got more comfortable with me, I just started to be more purpose.
Yeah.
Right. And you could just take it or leave it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm animated. I can be, you know what I mean? I can be a little extra. I can be very cool. I can be very calm. Whatever iteration of purpose you're going to get, it's going to be authentically me. So I was cool with that.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel like, I mean, how do you find that comfortable place after trying to model yourself after a person?
Well, I think for me, it's just kind of like, I wanted to be Purvis, right?
Yeah.
I spent most of my life not being Purvis or not knowing who Purvis was. Mm. And so I was like, I gotta be me. I have to be Purvis, whatever that is, whatever flawed, whatever imperfect thing that is. I just kind of like, I don't want to be the person who they're like, oh, he's like A.R. Bernard or his style is like A.R. Bernard. I want to be the person they're like, yo, that young man, Purvis Taylor is, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I like the way he presents. I like his style, you know, whatever that is, his style of speaking, his style of presentation, whatever that is. I just wanted it to be my own thing because I spent my life being a chameleon, just fitting in with whomever or wherever because I wasn't comfortable with me. So I just made the decision. I said, I am enough. How can I be teaching people how to be the best version of themselves and I'm not doing that?
Yeah.
You know? So I was just like, nah, I'm dope too.
Yeah, for real. So after going to, what did you get your bachelor's from? Bachelor's with at
Miami? Marketing.
Okay. And then you go to going to Columbia and getting a master's in clinical psychology.
Yeah.
It's like, so not even.
Yeah, but that, you know, marketing degree is 22. I mean, 21. I graduated 21. Clinical psych degree is 36.
Okay.
So there was like a gap in time. Yeah. Like I had life and, you know, and I was already, by the time I went to Columbia, I was already coaching celebs. I was already doing it.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to have a deeper foundation of what it is that we do. And I respect that space so much. I was like, let me get as many, much information as I can.
Did people feel like you were unqualified to coach them because you didn't get your master's until you were 36? And you were, but at that time, you were already helping out celebrities. So did any of them doubt your credibility?
You know what? Not that I know of. If anything, I was probably more the one, like, I kind of foresaw where we get into the space of, like, I mean, I was certified or whatever, but I was getting to a space where it's just kind of like, okay, I'm treading into real murky waters because the work I was doing, I was working with people who, you know, I worked with one celebrity who had bipolar and I helped her navigate through it. And it was like, that was kind of, even though I was able to do it, I don't recommend you do that. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, cause that's like getting into dangerous waters that I wasn't qualified to be in, you know? Truthfully speak, even though I had the gift and I could help, I just wanted it. I just knew that where I was going, I needed to have that degree. I just knew it.
And that's, you know, that's a lot of self-awareness because a lot of people kind of undermine or devalue the importance of education, especially when it comes to just being qualified to do things.
Yeah.
And, you know, it makes whoever you're trying to assist feel more comfortable knowing that, you know, you have those credentials. And, you know, also just personally, you know, you have more confidence in your ability knowing that you have those credentials.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I'm no more confident than I was before. Mm. And it's so funny. Oddly enough, I've been doing stuff, and that's the last thing they mention. Oh yeah. Oh, they be like, oh yeah, he has his master's in clinical psych. I'm like, that should be the first thing you say, but people tend to forget it. So you know, maybe I did it for me. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's beneficial either way.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you wrote a letter to a girl giving her words of encouragement after a guy didn't like her in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you probably look back at that just retrospectively,
mm-hmm.
seeing that how that could have led you to being the person that you are now. Mm-hmm. But were there any moments in adulthood that led you to this moment or led you to this life?
Yeah, man. Obviously, you know, death of my father. Also, just recognizing the pain and the feeling of being lost as a black man.
Yeah,
I was saying to myself, like, it felt so personal, but I recognized that it wasn't. I was like, I can't be the only one who's going through this. And so for me, it was just kind of like just life, just the life that I had lived up until that point. I was just like, if I could just help one man, if I could help one person not go through what I've been through, then I've done my job.
Yeah.
You know? So it was just life. Not that I've had like a horrible life, but I've definitely had some, you know, some experiences that like really shifted
yeah.
me, you know, as we all have.
Mm-hmm. Is it also pressure? Is there pressure that comes with being a black man, especially growing up in Texas, where there's just these traditional ideas of what masculinity is,
yeah.
And then, you know, playing sports, and you know, being tough, having yeah. muscles.
Yeah.
But you were a guy who you said you weren't an alpha male, you weren't a beta male. You felt like you were somewhere in between.
Yeah.
And you liked to dance, and you were creative.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there was a pressure? That's probably why you had that pressure to just try to assimilate to whatever.
Yeah, I mean, people. Yeah, I mean, bro, it was so complex because, you know, I used to keep a journal of girls that rejected me. Like, oh, this one rejected me, and I've just had horrible experiences around with women.
Yeah,
as you know, growing up, you know, with the exception of, you know, maybe one or two, but I had some horrible experiences, and on top of that, I always look younger than everyone else. So I don't know what they put in the food in Texas, but it seemed like I remember being in junior high, and I was, you know, not trying to be too graphic, but I remember, you know, we had to change clothes. I remember everybody had like hair under their arms and
in junior high?
In junior
oh,
high.
Oh, hair under their arms.
Hair under yeah. their arms and, you know, yeah. other places. And I didn't. And I was just like, I was like, what is wrong with me? So I was like underdeveloped.
Yeah.
Even, you know what I mean? For my age. I didn't start looking. So it's funny you said I don't look my age. I didn't start looking adult-ish until I was like 30.
Mm.
So I've always been behind. You know what I mean? So it was a lot of pressure. It was a lot of pressure. And I couldn't. You know, I was underdeveloped physically. I remember one time in junior high, we had to bench press the bar. You know, that's like 45 pounds.
Yeah.
I was the only boy who could not bench press the bar. And that experience traumatized me. I didn't even realize way up into my 30s because I just thought that I wasn't enough.
Yeah.
That moment said that you're not a man. Because I couldn't bench press it.
And just culturally.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's kind of wild because I don't even remember doing that in middle school. Like everybody got to, it's required to bench press. That's kind of.
Listen, we talking about Texas.
Yeah.
They groom them. They groom football players in Texas. Yeah.
So did you ever have, you know, you said that you grew up a chameleon. Mm-hmm. Did you ever feel like you had to be a chameleon in the world of sports?
Oh no. Like I just didn't play sports.
Yeah.
You know, even though I was in athletics, I always found a way. I was so embarrassed with my physical prowess that I would, you know, fake sickness. So I ran track, right?
Yeah.
I could run track, but when it came to track meets, I would be so embarrassed that everybody would out there see me. You know, I would think that I would finish in last place. I would just get sick. I would physically get sick whenever I had to do anything physical in front of a bunch of people. It was really deep.
So the psychological, the trauma actually turned into actual physical?
Actual physical sickness. Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, fast forward to now, you use Instagram as a platform to give a lot of advice. Mm-hmm. But there have been studies that show that Instagram use can lead to users having anxiety, depression.
Yes.
Along with social media being designed to be addictive.
Yeah.
Do you think that using social media, specifically Instagram, to further your message can also be counterproductive to your message?
I hope not. You know, I think the information I offer is a little bit different than most.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not promising people they can be a millionaire. I'm not offering, you know, how to become. I don't flex on Instagram like that. You know what I mean? Like, every now and then I may. But everything I post is actually real.
Yeah.
You know? That's never my intent, is to cause confusion, anything like that. I just want people, if anything, the base of my messaging is get to know who you are. And if you don't know who you are, go seek therapy. That is the basis of my you know what I mean? Like, that is the foundation of everything. And, you know, God is good. I love Jesus. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. it's that stuff, you know, but I'm not trying to, you know, be like, the relationship advice I offer is very sound. It's very much like, you know, basic fundamentals, like the strength of a relationship is in its ability to be repaired. That's like, that's period. That's yeah. not like, you know what I mean? I'm not saying like, oh, how to get a man and how to get a woman. Like, I'm not doing any of that. That's not my, you know, my lane, yeah. you know? So I hope that I get messages all the time, DMs all the time from people saying like, yo, what you said really shifted my life. So, you know, I do it for that reason.
What do you say to the people that approach you, women that approach you, men that approach you, about how to find a significant other?
I always ask them why.
Yeah.
Like, why? You know, because some people want to be in relationships so they can post on the gram. Some people yeah. want to, you know, have the appearance of like they're complete or they've made it. And, you know, a relationship is not an accomplishment. You know what I mean? It's just not, you know. But for some people it is. So, you know, the one thing I would say to them is like, you know, just know your why. Know why you want to get into a relationship. Also, make sure that you know you. You know?
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that you're a Christian and you love Jesus.
Yeah.
Do you think that religion often, or I guess people's interpretation of religion is that you're, especially with women, they might feel the pressure to have a man. And if they don't have a man that, and they don't have this image of a nuclear family, mm-hmm. that they're less of a person of God?
Yeah, I definitely do think that there is a culture that cultivates that, right? To get people to believe that. I don't necessarily know, you know, where that came from per se, but, you know, I did a video and I said, like, you're not a success because you're in a relationship, and you're not a failure because you're single. You know, you're still valuable. You still have value. You still can contribute to this world, whether you're single, whether you're married.
I saw you on one of your Instagram videos, you were talking about that.
Yeah, yeah. Like you still have something to offer, whether you're married or single.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think marriage is beautiful. I think relationships are beautiful. I think love is amazing. Like I said, I think love making is great, you know? but, if you don't have it right now, what do? Are you not in, you don't have an identity anymore?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, if you don't have it, does that mean that you're incomplete? Does that mean that you no longer have value, that you no longer have a purpose, that God can no longer use you? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Do you sit down with people as like a traditional psychotherapist?
No.
Okay.
I do. I'm more in the coach, you know, as a coach, I do sessions in person, but, you know, obviously due to the pandemic, everything's been virtual, which I hate. But yeah, no, I mean, yeah, sometimes I do in-person stuff
mm-hmm.
with clients. I actually like to do it in the park.
Oh, for real? Yeah, that's cool. Prospect Park?
Fort Greene Park is
okay.
Because I used to live near Fort Greene. Okay. So all of my clients, we would always meet in the park. And that way, because it's like nobody even know we having a session. Cause, you know, I want them to not feel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because some people, I have some high profile people that I coach. Some of them, you know, are like high profile. And I just want them to feel comfortable. Yeah. And I don't want them to feel like, you know what I mean? I don't want them to feel like we're in enclosed spaces. Like, you can just be out with everybody else and we just talking, we just having a conversation.
Yeah, because they might walk into a building that people know is an office for that kind of stuff.
Yes.
And everybody.
And everybody starts tweeting. Yeah. You know what I mean? That type of thing. Yeah.
So why go that route of being an author and a public speaker and having these one-on-ones in the park with people mm-hmm. instead of the traditional psychotherapist?
Nothing about me is traditional. I don't know if you picked it up. But I don't tend to do things traditionally, even though I respect, you know, traditional psychotherapy. I have my own therapist. I have such respect for it. I don't like feeling bound.
Yeah.
And I think most of my life I've always felt bound. And so I like the feeling of liberation.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just a feeling. It may not necessarily be true, but you know, with coaching, you have more liberty to do certain things. Like I can do certain exercises. I can divulge information about my life. I can use that as part of, you know, coaching and things like that. You know, with therapy, there's certain things that you, boundaries that you just can't cross. I just like the freedom that comes with the life that I have.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And just mentally, you know, you being a person who works in and tries to help people's betterment of their mental health, that, you know, you also need to do things that make you feel comfortable as well.
Yeah, and I like speaking, you know?
Yeah.
When you really get good, you can get paid a lot of money for a short amount of time.
Yeah.
You know? And that's a beautiful thing too. But also too, like, you know, the beautiful thing about, you know, public speaking and doing all those things like that is like, you can kind of see the lights go on in someone's eyes when you made a connection with them. And that right there is so invaluable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, your livelihood is dedicated to the healing of others.
Yes.
Who heals Purvis Taylor?
I have community. I have some friends. I have, you know, some lifelines. My therapist, the Lord, me. I the strength of any relationship is in its ability to be repaired. I've learned and I'm learning how to repair me, the relationship I have with me, by just being more, extending more grace towards myself and being more gentle with myself. I tend to be very, very hard on myself because I can in some ways be a perfectionist, and I'm kind of letting go of perfectionism and just be, you know, but yeah, all those things. I love to dance. I love to dance, and dancing is so healing, and I love to, you know, just be in community. I could literally be restored by just being around a group of my friends and us just laughing and just, you know, just doing whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you say to people who may not feel like you can't be a life coach to them because you haven't been in their shoes?
Okay. listen, I'm not for everyone, and I'm not where I'm at now, you know, 11, 12 years deep now. I'm just not in the business of selling who I am to anybody. Yeah. You know, I respect people's decision. And the truth is, I'm not for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, but I would say to them, don't use that as a crutch or as an excuse for you to not get the healing and the help that you need. I would say that to them. So it don't have to be from me, but you know, you can build that narrative and hold on to that narrative for forever, right? Yeah. To prevent you. So, you know, for instance, like my husband left me to be polyamorous. There's not going to be too many coaches who have that experience. I'm not saying that saying that there isn't one.
So specific and unique.
Specific and unique, right? You can hold on to that narrative to prevent you from doing the work to get on the journey that you need to get on. So my thing is, yeah, that's cool. You want to find somebody who can align with certain things, but don't let that be the reason why you don't get the healing you need. Yeah. That would be the thing I would say. Yeah.
Do you think there are more people that need healing than others?
Brother, we all need healing, you know, yeah. And we heal for the rest of our lives. We're healing for the rest of our lives. You know, healing is not this linear thing. It's continual. You know, my father died when I was 24. I'm 41 years old now. And it still hurts. It don't hurt like it hurt when I was 24.
Yeah.
But there's so many things in my life that have happened. So many things that have transpired. Like being an Ivy League graduate. My father would have lost his mind in knowing that I graduated from Columbia. He would have lost his mind, you know, seeing me on TV. He would have lost his mind just some of the accomplishments that yeah. I've had, you know? And that part hurts. And just not having that, you know, my daddy was my biggest cheerleader, you know? And so that, I'm healed of the initial gut-wrenching pain of it, but there's still stuff that lingers. You know what I mean? Father's Day come around, you be like, ugh. You know what I mean? And yeah. And it's funny, last Father's Day, I cried. I haven't cried on Father's Day in years. So you get what I'm saying? So it's like, I think that's the thing people don't recognize, is that you heal for the rest of your life.
What triggered that crying for the first time in years on Father's Day?
Just thinking about all the things that I've accomplished that he did not get a chance to see. And, you know, my family, God bless them, they just don't get it. Like, they just, like, they're like,
what you do?
Yeah, like, they I think they respect it, but it doesn't register the way it did for my dad, the way it would for my daddy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like, my mom was like, I graduated from Columbia in 2018. My mother, it clicked that I went to Columbia because she saw a movie on Obama. And it like, then she called me like, oh my God, I'm watching this movie on Obama and he went to Columbia. And I was like, my son went to Columbia. I had been graduated. I was like, mama, are you for real? You know what I mean? Like, God bless them. I love them. But I'm just saying, they're just not, I've lived most of my adulthood life without support. You know what I mean? And again, that's not shade towards them. It's just the truth.
It's just their lack of understanding.
It's just just who they are. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's just who they are.
Do they come from a more blue collar background? Do they not really understand like what's a prestigious university?
Well, that's the thing. So my mother went to Xavier University. And my father, even though he didn't finish, he went to Stanford.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? So, like, and my sister is well accomplished. My brother does well for himself. I just think that's just their bandwidth. Mm, yeah. You know what I mean? It's not shade. Like, my mom, she tries to support me the best way she can. And I know she loves me, and I know they, you know, they all buy books and they buy my books. They, you know, they do all of that stuff, but it's just never like, yo, I've done some big shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and it just doesn't land for them.
Yeah. Do you think that black men need more healing than black women? Because I see that the healing of black men is something that's prioritized in your work.
I don't want to make that statement because I don't want to answer it that like as direct
yeah.
as the question is, because we all need healing. And really, truthfully, like, part of our healing isn't healing each other, right? So meaning like, in order for black men to fully heal, we need to understand and have a respect and be intentional about the way we see black women and their traumas and things that they're going through and vice versa, right? So as black men, we need to have an understanding of what, you know, sexual assault is, what it means to not have equity in pay, what it means to be marginalized.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We need to have a deeper understanding of that, right? So it's on both sides, right? But I do think just in general, right? And I'm not, you know, every, I don't want to be monolithic about this, but in general, women are more communal by nature, and they're more intentional, and they have more advocacy for themselves.
Yeah.
To go get the healing that they need.
That's true.
And they typically have language.
And tend to be more transparent as well.
Yeah, they tend to be more vulnerable. They tend to be more transparent in what, you know, what they're experiencing, right? And obviously that's not, you know, I don't want to, you know, paint this broad brush, but that typically is the case. A lot of brothers typically don't have language, don't understand vulnerability, don't know what transparency is, you know what I mean? And aren't introspective enough to even kind of like pinpoint where it began.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, and then we have a culture that kind of encourages us to be a certain way. And that's like across the board. That's not even just black men. That's men in general, you know? And so when you see, you know, the alarming suicide rates, particularly in black men, the national suicide rates went down, numbers went down, but the numbers went up in black men, even as young as 5.
Which is insane.
That's insane. The fastest growing at one point was 5 to 12, right? And then, you know, 70% of all suicides are committed by men. So that's why I was like, you know, I just knew 10 years ago that we were going to get to the point where we're at now. And I was a lone ranger. And now there's so many voices, which I think is great, right? But yeah, like I've been on this journey in niche specific for over 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's good that you, you know, able to really divulge on that. Because I definitely see, you know, that you definitely lean specifically into black men needing to get help. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times there's discussions on social media coming from black women about how black men don't care about us as mm-hmm. much, or, you know, black men don't love black women.
Mm-hmm. There's some black men who don't love themselves. So how can they love you?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and we gotta, and I think as men, we gotta be brave enough to listen and to take in and not be defensive, because that's their experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and vice versa, right? We gotta listen to each other. We gotta let down our guards. We got to be vulnerable enough to listen to each other. So there, in, you know, in some black women's experiences, it is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, like in doing the work that I do, I want people, not even just men, I want us to know how amazing we are. And to love the creation that we are. And from that emanates loving others. From that emanates being kind, showing up as better husbands, as better fathers, as better friends, even as better leaders, right? So, yeah, that's the byproduct. So they can be better husbands, better boyfriends, and better lovers.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. On your TikTok, you spoke about
you watch my TikTok, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw you was doing a little line dance on there. I'm joking.
Oh, no, you're not joking. I got several dance videos on my TikTok.
I didn't even go down there.
Yeah, you should see those. They're really good. Check them out.
On your TikTok, you spoke about how not everyone is a hater. It's just that some people have a better relationship with lack.
Than they do with abundance. Yeah.
That was very profound to me. Can you divulge a little further on that rationale?
Yeah, you know, it's true. Like, most people have a relationship with lack than they do with abundance. And, it's, you know, that, you know, people think to their level of exposure, right? I've always been a person who's always been limitless in the way that I saw life. And I think part of the things that kind of makes me depressed at times is because I have such vast visions of life and knowing that all that I see is possible.
Yeah.
I just recognize that some people who live in abundance, and abundance doesn't necessarily mean financially, they live life differently. And I just recognize people who have a lack mindset, they live life a certain way.
Yeah.
They don't know how to be supportive. They don't sow seeds. They're not generous because they're holding on to life like this, which is when you hold on to life like this, what type of joy are you having? Mm. You know? When you just like, they're not surrendered. It's deep, bro. Like when you operate in lack, you are not fully thriving. Even if you got money, because I've coached some people who have tons of money,
yeah,
and they have a lack mindset.
Because
they're always worried about money. They're always worried about keeping it. They're always worried about, oh, I got to do this. Everything is just always a constant worry. There's no peace in that. When you have a lack mindset, you do not have peace. So people aren't always being a hater.
Yeah.
They are just immersed in lack. And so anything that comes that counters that disrupts them. And they don't want no parts of it.
Yeah.
Think about it. Think about when you come to enlighten people. Think about, and you know, we have whatever various stands, but you know, the vaccination. There's some people who are just like, you can have information. Da, 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 da.
It doesn't matter. Facts don't matter. Like
facts
whatever,
don't matter.
It's just whatever I feel.
It's whatever I feel.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and I'm not disrespecting nobody, believe what you want to believe, but what I'm saying is it's the same thing with when you try to enlighten people. For instance, right? I'm gonna be controversial. Kim Kardashian. She says
about work.
Yeah.
Recently.
Yeah. Yeah. People were upset about that. I wasn't. Why? Because sis live in abundance. Sis literally, you could say whatever, sex tape, she come from, you know, money, da 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 da. There are plenty of people who come from money who are not billionaires.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, keep it a whole bean. Like, she literally is a whole billionaire. It's two billionaires in her family. And you could say whatever. But what part of that was wrong?
Yeah, I think it's a more of a messenger thing. And I think
But see, that's the thing, right?
And that might be people having a better relationship with lack.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because there are certain things in my life that I've gotten from people who I couldn't stand. But I said, is what this person's saying, is it true?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm not, whatever. You could think whatever you want about the Kardashians. You can think, but I'm like, Gary Vee says the same thing. Puff says the same thing. DJ Khaled says the same thing. And they're all rich. So because this person said it, now it's a problem. Work hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how did I get to where I am? I worked hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like that's my thing. It's like we gotta be more inclined towards abundance. We gotta be more inclined towards abundance when not everybody has had that revelation. That possibilities can happen. And again, yeah, abundance doesn't mean that you're going to be a millionaire. Abundance just means possibilities can happen.
Yeah.
And there's no lack.
Do you think having a better relationship with abundance can possibly lead to, and this is just speaking from a monetary aspect,
mm-hmm,
the the having a better relationship with abundance can lead to you putting people in a position of lack through exploitation.
Explain that more.
Like, an example. You know, a lot of people, you talk about billionaires, you talk about how, like, in the Kardashians, there's two billionaires. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have critiques about billionaires saying that they got to where they are through being unethical. And
right. That's an assumption. We don't necessarily know. But go ahead.
Yeah. And, you know, people say they got to that position through being unethical or just looking at their practices in their history. Mm-hmm. And there might have been a lot of exploitation mm-hmm. in their past. Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely possible. But I think what you're asking me is, like, is abundance possible without exploitation?
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's about thinking of, for me, it's like, okay, if I don't get that opportunity, I know there's another opportunity. I'm looking at it from that aspect. The God I serve is able to create an opportunity for me. That's not the end, right? So if there are a million life coaches that came into the game today, right, who are just as good as me, abundance is like there's room for all of us. As opposed to lack, which exploitation is, that's lack. If I got, that means I got to shit on everybody else that the other million people, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's lack. If I can't be supportive of these other people, if I got to shut them down, if I got to, you know, malign them, I got to do all this stuff to be the prominent one, that's not abundance.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I get it. So if someone may not necessarily be a hater, they're just someone who has a better relationship with lack, then what are they?
On a journey. Hopefully on a journey to a freedom. I had a relationship with lack. And part of my healing and part of my healing and emergence and flourishing to a degree was embracing that, you know, I literally was talking to Dr. Nicola Beach, who is the host on Oprah's Put a Ring on It on network. And we were talking and it was like this opportunity, right? It was a panel that happened recently. And I was like, man, I should have been on that panel. And it was like, it was the panel that I needed to be on. And I hate panels, but I was like, I should have been on that panel. And I was talking to her. She was like, you know, she said, you know, Purvis, I literally felt that same way. And I had to be reminded about abundance again, right? So she was like, you weren't meant to be on that panel because if you were, you would have been on it.
Yeah.
She said, you would have been on it. Right? She said, there's so many rooms, so many doors that I thought I was supposed to go through. And she said, I had to rest in knowing the fact that whatever opportunity is going to be out there is going to be for whatever's for me is going to be for me. And bam, she gets Oprah co-signing. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, and so like that's the beautiful thing about it. That's the thing that has helped me to recognize, like, yo, Purvis, what's for you is for you. I wasn't supposed to be on that panel. You know, there are going to be other panels. There are going to be other opportunities. That's the gift of abundance, knowing that there's more.
Yeah. I saw you speak about self-care on your IG reels and how people need to make sure that they
dive deep, bro.
Yeah, man, I got to do my job.
I respect it.
Thank you. You spoke on your RG Reels about people, how they need to make sure that they self-know before they self-care.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to people who indulge in activities that they label as self-care but may be detrimental to their physical and mental well-being?
You know, the one thing I will always say is, like, you know, know thyself. The things that I do for self-care, and obviously, you know, they can go from cosmetic, but they really need to go to soul.
Yeah.
You know, what does your soul need? The soul is the mind, will, and emotions. What does that need? to be cared for. And most people don't take the time to know what that is, right? So sometimes I just need to be hugged. You know what I mean?
Like simple as that.
Simple as that. Self-care for me could be going to my aunt, my auntie and uncle's house in Harlem for Sunday dinner. And just the way that I feel there, that's part of my self-care. Like, I'm like, no, I need to get to Aunt Jay's house. I need to get to Aunt Jay's house. Just being there is healing for me. I feel restored being there, you know? But that's because I know the things that I need, right? I spend a lot of time talking to myself. Most people don't do that. You got to be introspective to know who you are in order to care for yourself. How you caring for something you don't know?
Yeah, you put it in simple terms like that, definitely.
Yeah, so, you know, my thing is get to know who you are. And self-care is really, at the heart of it, is really, self-care is really about soul care, taking care of yourself. And obviously extensions of it goes to cosmetic, you know, getting your hair cut, getting facials and things like that, because that is part of self. But it goes deeper. You know, are you going to your therapist? Are you exercising? Are you journaling? Are you having fun? You know, that's self-care.
Yeah.
Going to brunch is self-care. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. In the intro of Healing Forward, you speak about how clinician Bashia Williams said, women tend to heal forward, help heal toward a future.
Yes.
And men, depending on their age, heal to remedy the mistakes of their past.
Yes.
Thus inspiring the title of your book.
Heal Forward. Yes.
Yes. Can you give examples of how men heal retrospectively?
Yeah. So, you know, like a lot of, I have a friend of mine who, he's married, he has family. But he had a fiance before, and he necessarily didn't do her right. And he, you know, he reached out to her. He remedied that relationship, not realizing that that was, you know, affecting his current marriage, like how he was showing up, because he still carried that. And so, like, he tried to heal the past and thought he was good. I was like, no, but you gotta, because the damage is already in your current thing, because you weren't showing up. You were thinking that you were doing something by fixing that, but now you gotta fix this so you can move forward, so you can heal forward, right? Women heal for the next man. Mm. Typically, they heal for the future.
Yeah.
They're like, let me heal so I can go get a deal. So you know what I mean? Let me heal. Let me heal and go to grad school. Let me go do this, boom, 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 so I can go be CEO or build my own empire.
Yeah.
But they do it healing. Men, you know, like, think about fathers who get married, they have other families and they have other kids, and they don't really necessarily take care of those, you know, those kids. They do their best to heal that, but not knowing that you need to heal forward.
Yeah.
You need to think about what's the plan for all your kids going forward. Not just, let me just repair that, or let me just apologize. No, you need to heal that and have a future in mind towards it. So men just typically heal with just the past. I made some mistakes. You know, because all for a man, all we want to be known is a good man. That's all we want to be known as, a good man. And for us, being a good man means we had to have a good past. We're not thinking about future, how that healing can go forward. And so, like, when Bashay said that, I was like, that's so true. Men heal. They just want to fix what happened in the past, but they're not thinking about what's going to happen. No, so yeah.
Is it helpful or harmful to heal retrospectively?
No, it's, you know, healing is never bad. Just think, just don't stop there. Just don't stop there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, you made a mistake in the past, you can rectify it, but what's the plan for it going forward? Because all that stuff influences where you are. You know what I'm saying? So, like, if you if you, you know, my friend's case, you know, fiance, he did wrong, that he did wrong. He probably was overcompensating in his current situation. Or he probably was people pleasing. You know what I mean?
It makes it look contrived.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. But that's causing damage to that. So like, yes, you fixed that, but it doesn't undo your the things that you've adapted. You get what I'm saying? So you have to learn how to like heal that. Be aware of the things that you've adopted and adapted. Repair that and then have a vision and plan for where you want to go forward with that. So there's nothing wrong with wanting to heal. You know, that's what therapy is about. Therapy is about repairing the past so you can live in the now and have hope for the future.
Yeah.
So it's never wrong to heal retrospectively. Just don't stop there.
Yeah. Do you think healing forward is something that is possible for everyone? Does everyone have that capability or self-awareness?
I hope so. That's my hope, you know? Listen, you know, if you're 80 years old, even though that's like you're in the sunset of your life,
yeah,
those last 20 years or even a year, however long that is, can be more peaceful. You can always make a change at any point. You can always shift at any point if you want to. So I believe that for a majority of us, that we can always shift at any time if we want to. And there's nothing wrong with having a dream and wanting to have a vision for your life, or wanting to even have peace, or even wanting to just have love and all those great things that life offers. Absolutely, we can all heal forward. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's my hope.
If they're willing to do so.
If they're willing to do so. Yeah. You have to be intentional about it.
Yeah. You said we are potentially on the precipice of healthy masculinity. In your definition of unhealthy masculinity, do you think that there are some positive aspects or positive effects of toxic masculinity?
I would say the one thing about, I guess, masculinity currently, I like that us as men being providers. I like that.
Yeah.
But I just think we're so much more than just that. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, for instance, during the pandemic, I spoke to some fathers, a group of fathers who lost their jobs during the pandemic, right?
Mm.
And they didn't know what to do. And I was like, yo, you get to be a father. And they were like looking at me like I just spoke Swedish.
What does that mean? I need to provide to be a father.
Right.
Yeah.
You can provide emotionally. You can provide wisdom-wise. You can provide loving-wise. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much more to provision than just money. And I think for a lot of them, that shifted them. And I think that's the danger of provision, right? Being providers, we are only actualized by our performance as men. We're taught to be performative. Now, what happens when that can't happen? Are we no longer men? Are we no longer a soul?
Yeah.
And again, I'm for provision, providing. Like, we got to do that, period. But provision is more than just money. And so that aspect of it, I do like, but I do think too much emphasis is on the financial part. And that puts a lot of pressure on brothers. You know what I mean? It's so many brothers out there who are just like wound up so tight.
Yeah.
Because they're like, yo, I gotta do this, I gotta do this. You know, she want a vacation, she want this. Or you think she wants that, right? And she might not even be wanting it, but you think that that's what she wants, right? And that's the only way you feel that you can prove yourself. But what the pandemic taught us is that what goes up must come down.
Mm.
You're going to lose who you are because you don't make six figures no more? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like you got to, yeah. Because you were still a person before you made the six figures.
You were still a person before you made the six figures. And if people leave because you no longer can do what you used to do, then they wasn't there
For the right reasons.
For the right reasons. Yeah. So they did you a favor. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, that part of it. But this, like, you know, high body count, this anger, aggression, this, you know, not understanding, not being understanding of your emotions and not being responsible for your emotions, all of that stuff. Nah. Nah. I don't like that part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Being promiscuous and, you know, just, yeah, having bodies everywhere, having babies everywhere. Nah.
It's almost like you see that sometimes, and it seems like those men, especially just having kids everywhere, it's almost like a sign of their masculinity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's wild, right? That's deep.
Yeah.
it's deep. And it's like, you know, what about the brother who don't have no kids or who ain't been married? Is he not a man?
Yeah.
Or who doesn't have, you know, who isn't sexually promiscuous? He's not a man? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's, yeah.
Yeah. What have we learned from toxic masculinity that we need to unlearn?
I would say, like, there are many things, but just the emotional aspect, you know, when you think about the rage that some brothers have and aggression and the anger, that part, you know, because anger feels so empowering.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When you're angry, you feel so empowered and you walk around with that. You feel so strong. But really, you know, underneath, you know, anger is like hurt and fear. And underneath that is like, you know, disappointment. And then that goes down to expectations that weren't met. But, you know, anger is so interesting because it can be constructive or it can be destructive. Most of the time it's destructive. And, you know, when you're angry, you know, they say when emotions run high, intelligence runs low, right? Mm. And so think about some decisions people have made because they were angry. His brother's in jail right now because they were angry.
Over one moment. That didn't last a long time at all.
That did not last a long time. Somebody bumped into them on the train and they knocked them out. And now you in jail. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, just that anger aspect, the aggression, I think that part is definitely a major part. And just even, you know, the sexual prowess, right? You know, like, it's a lot of brothers who spread themselves thin, who then gave they self away. And they talk about women giving themselves away. It's brothers who gave they self away.
Yeah. They feel like There's no kind of trauma related to being promiscuous as a man.
Yeah.
It's just like an emotionless thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is complete. It's completely a thing. It's completely a traumatic thing. It's like you done gave yourself away. And then it's like by the time you do find that one woman, y'all have issues because you done been with everybody and everything. You know what I mean? And that one woman, that poor woman has to live up to, you know, these ideas, to these ideals in your mind. And that's not fair to her. It does damage, and people don't recognize that.
Yeah. Is it difficult to teach or expose people from an older generation to these new concepts of toxic masculinity versus healthy masculinity?
Yeah. Yeah, it is a challenge. But, you know, I also understand it, right? Part of toxic masculinity, part of it, if I look at it through the eyes of empathy, that was survival. That is how a lot of men survived. You know what I mean? Like having the world on their shoulders, having to provide for their families, why getting beat down, not getting paid your worth, you know, racism, all these things that are existing, right? I understand it. And I think for them, it's kind of like, well, we turned out okay.
Yeah.
Well, did you?
Yeah.
I mean, but they turn out decent. Not
really.
Enough.
You traumatized all your kids.
You traumatized all your kids. Traumatized all your kids. But not, you know, not only just that, it's kind of like, yeah, you made it through, but you just know how to suppress it better than we do. Because we don't have to. Like, you could do this podcast. You could go be an ice skater. You can go be a tennis player. You could be whatever you want to be today. They didn't have that option.
It was all survival.
It was all survival.
So with survival, you don't really need to deal with emotions.
You don't need to deal with emotions. Yeah. Emotions are, they're the last thing you're thinking about. You're just trying to provide for your family, right? And or provide for yourself. So it's like, that is a challenge for them because they're like, we made it. But yeah, but it costs you something. You know? But I do think if they are vulnerable and transparent and introspective enough, they get it. But you know, coping is what we do. So if part of coping is I'm gonna hold on to that in order for me to live, that's what they're gonna do.
Do you think that we have to deal with coping as Black people more than other groups of people?
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely do. But I also think that we have an opportunity to cope in healthier ways. And I think that we as Black people, we can be more responsible and take more agency about getting the help that we need, so that we can cope in better ways.
Yeah.
I think that there's so many things available to us. I think there's so many opportunities. And I think that, you know, we should take advantage of those things. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that toxic masculinity can kind of turn into internalized misogyny for women?
Yeah. I do. I think part of toxic masculinity, one of the biggest things that I think when they're listing what it is, they don't include misogyny.
Yeah.
And that's actually one of the biggest things too, that the biggest detriments to toxic masculinity, that to come out of toxic masculinity is misogyny.
Yeah.
You know, just the whole Me Too movement. You know, women being sexually assaulted, all of that stuff.
But I mean, like, for women also, like...
Oh, for them.
Yeah,
for them.
A lot of women have internalized misogyny. Do you think that's a product of toxic masculinity?
I think there's a contribution to it. I think, like, meaning, like, in terms of, like my mom, and correct me if I'm wrong, if this is what you're saying, like, my mom, when she hears about the women with Bill Cosby, she was like, well, what was they doing?
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
She's like, so what was they doing at the hotel? I was like, well, how about he don't put nothing in the drink?
People pay attention to the wrong details.
Yeah. So it's a bunch. Absolutely. Right. Mm-hmm. But that's a subconscious less being taught, like, women are to blame.
Yeah.
It's your fault. But, and it's so wild. My aunt was raped as a child, and we just discovered this as a family, the nieces and nephews, we discovered this. And the way my family handled it, it was almost kind of like, it was your fault. Why was you there? You know what I mean? That type of thing. So rough. Like, it's rough, but to a degree, you're absolutely right. I do think it's created misogyny within women, certain generations of women. Cause I've noticed like the language, like my mom, my grandmother, all them, the language is different than like my peers. Like, they're not saying, like, you know what I mean? They believe women, you know what I mean? But my mom's just like, I literally have to tell her, like we were talking about Monique was talking about, you know, pay equity and pay for Black women. Mom was like, well, you just need to be happy with, no. Oh, you didn't fight for yourself. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So that's what you're letting me know.
That goes back to people being okay with an abundance of lack.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And it also lets me know that how much that generation didn't have agency, like how we do. They had grit. They know how to endure and go through things. But you need grit but you also need agency. You need both, you know? And so, like, my mom, you know, my goal is why she's still here. I want her to engage more in agency. I want her to engage more in abundance. There's more life for you to be lived. You 70, yeah, but there's still some things that God could do with you. Mm-hmm. You ain't finished.
Yeah.
You know?
What do you say to people who think that therapy is for the weak and that they should tough it out and the whole be a man mentality?
Well, I would say that they have it in reverse. Those who go to therapy are very, very strong. And those who don't seek help. I don't even like to use the word weak, but just not as strong. It takes a lot of bravery to go, to be vulnerable, to display your life and share your fragilities with another person, and risking being wounded again, right? So there's a lot of bravery and courage it takes to go seek help, to seek counsel from a therapist, and you know, tough it out, sucking it up. That's killing everybody. That's why we got all these suicide rates.
Yeah.
That's why we got all these diagnoses of depression and anxiety, which people are sucking it up.
Which leads to a lot of physical illnesses.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because one thing Eric Bernard says, he says, what the mind can't handle, it poses on the body.
Yeah.
It's true. There's a psychosomatic relationship mm-hmm. between our minds and our bodies.
Yeah. Is there such thing as toxic femininity?
I wrote an article, I think, one time about it. And now I'm just thinking, I'm just like, if there's toxic masculinity, there, I'm pretty sure there could be toxic femininity, but I've been trying to mull it over in my brain what it is.
It kind of sounds ridiculous, but yeah. You know, it's something I just have to ask you.
Yeah. What would your definition of toxic femininity be?
I don't know.
That's, yeah. that's why I'm just kind of like, what would it be? Yeah. Is it like akin to, I'm just taking a stab, like, would it be like wanting to have nice things or be pampered or, I don't know.
Yeah, because then it might create a climate where people call a woman a gold digger or something.
Yes, like that. I'm thinking like that culture of like gold digger type of thing.
Yeah. But then, you know, the concept of gold digger is all relative.
Or toxic femininity could be like radical independence of not needing anyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We could Google it. What are the attributes of toxic femininity?
That's almost like when people get upset about Black History Month or people calling Black people reverse racists.
Yeah, that's kind of, when you think about racism, racism is about power.
And structures and
structures
institutions.
And institutions. Yeah. We don't have those.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's for a different podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I was just thinking about like toxic femininity. And I was thinking about that actually. And I was just kind of like, what is it around gold digging? Is it around like, you know, radical independence, feminism, like extreme feminism? I don't know.
Yeah. What's next for you?
My favorite question. I don't know, but I know it's gonna be amazing. TV, definitely TV, more speaking, more coaching, more books, more fun. I'm speaking that right now.
Yeah.
I want a life filled with fun. Fun, fun, fun. More money. More love. Yeah, but what's next? Definitely more TV. That's something I've been wanting to do for a long time. Is you know, I want to be on Tamron Hall. I want to be a guest on her show. You know, doing the talk show circuit.
Yeah,
just being, you know, just doing more public things. I want to definitely amplify the brand and the name of Purvis Taylor the Third, Dr. Yeah. Purvis Taylor the Third, to some people. Yeah, just amplifying.
Yeah,
and helping more people.
Last question for you. Why do words matter to you?
Words matter because words are spirits. Words create worlds and words tear down worlds. Mm. Words are so powerful because when you think about your healing is in your words. Language is everything. Life and death is in the power of the tongue. So words are the most powerful thing that we can share,
yeah,
into the atmosphere, you know. Yeah, I tell brothers all the time. I said, you know, the reason why they say on average men speak 10,000 words a day, women speak 30,000 words a day, wow. on average, right? So that means there's like a 20,000 word gap in communication. There's also means that men, our language is limited, therefore our healing is limited. And therefore, for us to have greater amounts of healing, we need to have greater amounts of words, meaningful words,
yeah,
intentional words. So that's why words matter to me.
Love that. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. Thank you, Purvis Taylor, the Third, author of Heal Forward.
Heal Forward.
Author of Heal Forward and public speaker. Academic, TikTok, line dancer. yeah, man. Thank you for coming here, for thank doing this. My name is Akil. Purvis Taylor to the right of me, for everybody who's not watching. And please, I always forget to say this, like, comment, and subscribe on everywhere that this podcast is. Rate. Put stars, all of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, brother.
Words matter.